Hi everyone, this is Steve. Welcome to Pacific Life Church Podcast. At the end of this episode, please take a moment to check out our website, pacificlifechurch.org, and subscribe to our email list. The email is actually the best way to keep up with everything going on around here at PLC. Most importantly, I hope the following presentation will inspire you to follow Jesus, love each other, and serve your neighbors. Well, good morning, everyone. Good to see you. Good to have you here. Everybody online, good to be here as well, and good to have you online. And spring is here. Doesn't it feel great? Come on, man. Get kind of excited. It's, you know, I'm excited about spring. A lot of years ago, I just graduated from a little Bible college in the Santa Cruz Mountains called Bethany. And right out of college, I got this amazing job at a church. It was really a big church over in Lodi. And I didn't have any idea what I was doing. I'm not even sure why they, to this day, I'm thinking, why did you hire me? Because I had no experience. Even though in my college I learned a lot about theology and biblical studies, I had all that stuff. They did not train me at that particular time how to be a pastor, how to do any of that kind of stuff. So I have 200 students in my youth group from middle school all the way through college, and I just don't know what to do. I'm really way over my head. And I'll never forget, I became friends with this guy. His name was John Milton. And John was a veteran youth pastor. He had been a youth pastor at that time, probably about 15 years. And he saw me in distress. And he was such an amazing guy. He took me under his wing, and he began to disciple me on how to be a youth pastor, you know, how to work with students. And I love John. Let me tell you a little bit about it. John pastored in a church called Placerville, a little tiny town. A long time ago, even smaller, and he was known in this town. Everybody loved John Milton. If you walked through the town, which I did a couple times with him, everybody was like, John, hey, John. He was just that kind of a guy. He used to write a column on movies in this little community paper that they had. So, you know, he would write up the reviews. And then they had a racetrack, and I think it was every Saturday, John would be in the races. And they called him Crazy John. And he was just this, he was a bigger than life character, and he played such a part in my life. I don't know what I would have done without him. And the reason that I bring up this story is because he did what we call discipling, and that's really what we're going to talk about this morning, how to make disciples. And that's one of the greatest ways that you can have influence in the world as we talk about influence. So let's start with the definition of disciple so that we're all on the same page. It actually comes from a Latin word meaning learner or a pupil. To be a disciple is to be a lifelong student or a learner. And by the way, even if you're not a Christian, you should always be a learner. Always. Never give up on learning in life, but as a disciple of Jesus especially. Now, a lot of times when we think of disciples, we immediately think of the 12, right? We go, yeah, disciples of Jesus. And there were the 12, but then there was a lot more than that. There were many, many disciples that followed Jesus in his public ministry. In fact, one time you can read about it where he sends 72 disciples out. He sends them out. They're being disciples. So he goes, okay, I'm going to send you out. I want you to spread the good news. So one of the questions that followers of Jesus commonly ask is this, and it's a great question, by the way. What do I do now? Okay, now that I become a Christian, what do I do now? And unfortunately, for too many churches, the answer to that list is, glad you asked. So let's start with all the things you should stop doing, you know, and like this big old list. Now, sometimes that's part of the deal, but that's not the only deal. In fact, there's so much more. So there's so many more exciting things than let's just, you know, like name all the sins out. You got to stop that. And then you got to do all these other things. There's actually what Jesus called us to do. So Jesus left instructions for his followers right before he made his departure. One of his disciples, his name is Matthew, actually recorded those words. We call it the Great Commission. And if you have your Bibles, I'd like you to turn to the book of Matthew. It's the very first book, actually, in the New Testament. And we're going to be in the last chapter, in the last part of the last chapter. We're going to look at verses 16 through 20. And I'm going to read to you from the NLT translation. It says this: "Then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. And when they saw him, they worshiped him." This is really important. "But some of them doubted. Jesus came and he told the disciples, 'I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples.'" Notice the word "go." "Go and make disciples all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands that I have given you. And be sure of this: I'm with you always, even to the end of the age." So as I follow Jesus, what am I actually supposed to be doing? And Jesus starts right here. And actually, in verse 18, he said, "Jesus came and he told the disciples, 'I have been given authority all in heaven and earth.'" So we are discipled by the one who has the ultimate authority. He says, "Therefore, go." Go. This is where a lot of people never make it, because instead of going, they stop. Because, and I hate to say it, sometimes, depending on what they've heard, how they became a Christian, that's about really all that they know. And so as far as they're concerned, well, hey, I prayed the prayer, you know, I go to church, I read my Bible sometimes, and so I'm all set. No, you're not. Jesus said, if you're a follower of Jesus, said, no. This is just the beginning of the journey. I want you to go. And I know for some people it's like, well, I don't think I'm ready. You know, I'm not, I don't know if I'm ready to go. What do I do about that? So in verse 17, catch it, it says, "When they saw him," so his disciples, this is the resurrected Jesus, right? So he's been hanging around for a while, and he's just getting ready to make his departure. "When they saw him, they worshiped him, but some of them doubted." Now, here's what I want you to pay attention to. Notice Jesus didn't say, "When you got it all figured out, when you're 100%, when you got your theology down and you understand everything, then I want you to go." He didn't say that. He just says, "Go." Now, what you have to understand about these disciples is this had been a whirlwind experience. 6 weeks earlier, they saw him crucified. They were running for their lives. And then he's resurrected. And so for this time, you know, Jesus is kind of coming in and out. He's making appearances. One time, over 500 people see him. So he's like, he's back. But they're still confused. I mean, they're kind of spinning about the way this thing is working out. Now, first of all, what Jesus was, who the Messiah was not what they thought he would be. In fact, most of all of the Jews were like, that's not what we thought the Messiah was going to be like. That's not our version of how we thought this whole thing was going to work out. So these disciples, they're still trying to work this out. They're like, and you can imagine, even all this time later, they're going, so Jesus, are you going to like kick the Romans out now? Are we going to take the world over? Because that's what we think you're supposed to do. That's our understanding of it. And he's like, no. And he has to really explain it over again. I came to save the world. I came to die for the sins of the world. That was my mission. And it would take them a while to figure this thing out. So basically what they're doing is they are still putting the pieces together, and they don't have it quite figured out. But here's the thing about it. Even though they don't have it all quite figured out, they're so excited about a resurrected Jesus that they're beginning to share it with people, and immediately Christianity is beginning to take hold. So you don't have to have it all together to go and to share about Jesus. Now, there is one prerequisite when Jesus calls us, and that's obedience. Obedience is the only prerequisite. And look what he says in verse 16. It says, "Then the 11 disciples left for Galilee, going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go." So they got this part right. He says, okay, guys, I want you to go over to Galilee. There's a mountain over there. I'm going to meet you over there, right? But he said, he only gave them the next step after they did that first. So they did it. They're like, okay, the boy showed up. And they met him there, and he goes, now I'm going to give you the next step. And this is really, really an important part of the discipleship journey. When I was 19 years old, I became a Christ follower. And you know, I was pretty messy when I became a Christ follower, but I wanted to do my best. And so one of the first steps that the Lord gave me And by this time, I had made my way to the college that I was going to. You know, I was committed to Jesus. But I was dating a gal that I'd been in a relationship for about 2 years. She was Buddhist. You know, I'm a Christian. It's, you know, it's an out-of-bounds relationship because it's very sexual and everything. And so I'm praying, you know, and I'm like, and the Lord tells me very, you know, he's like, Steve, you got to break it up with this gal. And I'm like, well, Lord, you know, I really like her a lot. I think I love her, actually. And as the more I prayed about it, the more the Lord just made it clear that I had to do that. And so I did it. And this is an obedience thing. It's like, okay, God, I will do it. And as soon as I did that, like within a year, I had unbelievable clarity about my life. And God gave me the next step. And for me, the next step was actually the calling into full-time vocational ministry. It was an amazing next step. And I say that to say that as a disciple, it's always about that. It's always about, okay, I'm going to give you the next step. But if you're not doing the last step, whatever that would be for you, then you're going to be kind of stuck there for a while. Let me give you another example of this when it comes to obedience. How many of you guys remember the movie The Karate Kid? You ever see that? Okay, remember the original one back in 1984? They made this movie, and you had Daniel, and you had Mr. Miyagi. And Mr. Miyagi is this master karate guy, and he's trying to teach Daniel, you know, how to do karate, how to do martial arts. And there's this one scene that if you've ever seen the movie, you'll always remember it, where he sends him out to go wax down his car. He's got these beautiful classic cars, and so he shows him how to wax the car, you know. And Daniel's really at this point, he's like, "You're just trying to get me to wax your car." You know, he's not really liking what's going on. And, you know, he shows, well, let's do it this way. You know, wax on, and then wax off. And he just keeps doing it over and over again. And Daniel's like, you know, and at one point, he's almost over it. But, you know, he finally decides to go through with it. And then that's when Mr. Miyagi shows him, okay, here's why I taught you that. And it turns out to be this maneuver that really pays off, because in the movie, he's getting bullied and he uses that maneuver, and then he goes on and he wins a tournament. That's a lot like what God does for us. A lot of times we don't understand it. We're like, yeah, why should I do that? Or why should I quit that? You know? Well, just do it. And when we do it, God says, okay, I'm going to show you something now. And that thing that he's going to show you is going to be the next step of your life, part of your discipleship journey. So obedience is key in being a disciple and actually making disciples. Now, the thing that he goes on to talk about is the destinations of a disciple, and they are limitless. I love this. In verse 19, he says, therefore go and make disciples of all nations. And this is one of the reasons that we are a church that supports missionaries. I just Googled this the other day. There's 195 nations in the world today. And he said, go to all the nations that are out there. So, like, I'm so excited to be able to, that our church is able to support the missionaries that we have one over in Bolivia. We have one over in, next week we're going to have one from Japan that's going to be here. And so he's going to be here for about 10 minutes, and we have a couple of other places that we're serving, that we have, we're supporting people to serve in those places, and we're just so excited to be able to do that. When I was in college, shortly after I got out and I was doing youth ministry, I wanted to be a missionary. Anybody here ever want to be a missionary? Ever thought of a missionary? Okay, good. Got somebody back there. And I thought, you know, I'm going to do youth ministry, and then I'm going to be a missionary, and I'm going to travel somewhere in the world. And so I thought, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to find out about from missionaries what it's like to be a missionary. So I started having lunch with missionaries whenever they came by the church. I'd hang out with them, and I very quickly discovered that was not my skill set. It's to be a missionary, first of all, usually you have to learn another language. And I thought, man, I'm still working on English. I don't know. That's just not my skill. And then I also learned that a lot of times you have to be like a master builder, because you have to understand construction, because a lot of that goes on. And I said, well, I just don't think that I'm cut out to be a missionary. And then sometimes you have to eat some gnarly foods, as I discovered when I went to Papua New Guinea. And I don't do that very well either. So I'm like, okay, I am not cut out to be a missionary. However, I get to do the second best thing, and that is support missionaries. And so I said, well, okay, if I can't go, then I'm gonna pastor one day, and I'm gonna have a church that supports missionaries. And that's why I'm so glad that some of you are generous and you've been able to support some of the missionaries that we're supporting today. So Jesus says, go to be a disciple. But here's the question. Who is Jesus calling you to go to? Like, what is your mission field in your life? So when Jesus, in his earthly ministry, what was his mission field? Well, basically, he focused on Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. You can just read about his travels right there. He just, that was his area of focus. But what about you? Like, what is your area of focus? Well, basically, it ought to be your neighborhood. It ought to be where you're doing life. If you're in, like Chris, if you're in the military, that's your mission field. If you work somewhere, you know, whether it's blue collar, white collar job, whatever it is, that's your mission field. Your friends, like when you're out, if you are in a basketball league or in a softball league or you know, your playtime, that's your mission field. For me, a lot of times I love to serve. A lot of times I'm out there and I get to know people. That's my mission field. So all of us are called to have a mission field and to go out and disciple people. So sometimes people are reluctant. Like, let me ask you this question. If you're not, what's holding you back? What's holding you back? Here's some of the things that I hear people tell me sometimes through the years. They say things like, Steve, you don't get it. I'm just not wired that way. So let me speak to that, okay? Because I've had the same reluctance in my life, especially when I first became a Christ follower, and I discovered that part of the journey was that I would actually go out and share Christ and disciple other people. And I think the first emotion that I had was fear. I think a lot of people, they're just afraid. They're like, oh man, that, you know, I don't know how it's going to go down. I don't like being rejected. I don't like people thinking that I'm weird. And then for unfortunately for a lot of people, it's just not a priority. It's just like, you know, that's for some people, that's just not for me. And I just got to tell you, if that's where you're at, that's not a, you know, that's clearly not a part of the Jesus journey. Jesus said go, and that meant everybody. And so it's there. It's to be a priority. And then sometimes we just overthink it, don't we? Have you ever, like, maybe you got a next door neighbor and you're like, you know, one of these days, you know, I should at least let this person know that I'm a Christ follower. And then, you know, there's that moment and you're like, oh man, I should say something right now. And the moment passes. Why? Because you're just overthinking it. So, and the other, here's the other thing that sometimes people do is they have a stereotype in their head. You ever done that? You think, well, that's where some people, because, you know, in the stereotype, like they're extroverted and, you know, they don't have a problem with that. But there are different kinds of disciples, all kinds of different kinds of disciples. And here's what you need to know, because this is important. God made you just the way that he wanted to make you. There's purpose in who you are, in your design. There's purpose in your personality. Whether you're an extrovert or whether you're an introvert or you're somewhere in between, there's purpose in all that. So to come to follow Christ is, God says, okay, I'm going to use who you are. I think of the original disciples. And you think of a guy like Peter, there's that stereotype, right? Yeah, Peter, man. I mean, he was an amazing guy, but it ain't me. You know, Peter's out there preaching. He's an extroverted guy, you know. But then there's another kind of disciple. His name is John. He's not extroverted. He's actually introverted. He's a writer. He's very introspective. You'd have to say, well, who is more effective? They were both amazingly effective. And so God will use you, your personality, and wherever you live, however, you know, life is going and how you're living your life, wherever you are, that's, God is going to use your personality to go out. And that this series is called Influence, and guess what? You have way more influence than you think you do. We all underestimate our influence. In fact, you know, a lot of times you don't figure out your influence until sometimes years go by, and then you begin to hear from this person and that person, and you're like, what? I didn't even think they knew who I was. I didn't think they paid any attention to me at all. And you discover that you have a lot more influence than you do. And so he says, make disciples and make disciples, verse 19. And, you know, a lot of times people say, wait a second, isn't that your job, Steve? isn't that what we have you for? That you're supposed to make disciples? And what about Tony and the staff and Sarah and everybody? Isn't that their job? Actually, no. No, we're supposed to equip the saints for ministry. In the book of Ephesians, it talks about that. So basically, we're to help you help others disciple. And so we're to teach you that. In fact, if you lead a life group, you're already discipling. You just don't call it that. If you work with children, you're discipling. If you work with our youth group, you're discipling. You're doing it, but you just never put a title on it. Like, oh, really? I'm discipling. You're influencing people. So there's like places and spaces that a lot of you can have influence in that you can disciple in. Tony could never go in some of the spaces you go into. Neither could I. Neither could Sarah. But you can. Why? Well, because they know you. They trust you. And so you have a voice in a place where I maybe don't have a voice. So use it. You're a disciple. Use that voice. And then you might say, okay, I like that. But how do I make disciples? I'm so glad you asked, because we're going to talk about that. I have to have someone. Now, this is something that I'm going to tell you that I have been practicing, and I've been doing this for years, okay? So I'm not going to tell you something that I don't do. And that is that I've always had somebody on their spiritual journey ahead of me. I've always had somebody right alongside of me, and I've always had people in back of me. And that's how you do discipleship. And in fact, the Apostle Paul modeled this so beautifully. So in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1, it says, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Now, that's pretty big. I mean, how many of us would be willing to like put that out there and go, just follow me as I follow Christ? Now, what you need to know is that Paul was not a perfect man. He wasn't. He was a great man, but he wasn't a perfect man. And so he wasn't saying, follow me because I'm just like Jesus. No, he was just saying, follow me because I'm doing everything I can to follow Jesus. And if you follow me, I think you're going to be okay. I'm not doing it perfectly. And if you think about the journey of Paul, you got to remember that he started from ground zero just like you and I did, right? And so, you know, he has this encounter with Jesus. The next thing he knows, there's this guy named Ananias. And Ananias is like really, you know, teaching him. But Paul is starting he's learning from Ananias. And then some years go by, and next thing, Paul has all these people around him, and he's traveling with them, and they're alongside him. And so, you know, then by that time, he's got Luke, and he's got Silas, and he's got Barnabas, and he's got some of these other people, and they're his contemporaries now, right? And so, you know, he's now got people behind him, and he's helping them. He's got people alongside of him, and then eventually he begins to disciple a lot of people. Pretty soon he's writing letters to a guy named Timothy, who's a young guy who's a pastor, and he's writing to a guy named Titus. And so now Paul has got people behind him, beside him, and people that he's now ministering to. So let me ask you this question: who is discipling you? Who's discipling you? This would be somebody who is ahead of you, spiritually speaking. Like, they've been down the road a little bit more. They understand maybe the Bible more. And so is there a person like that that's in your life? And when I say that, I know sometimes people are put off by the word discipling, so let's just take that word out for a second. Is there just somebody ahead of you that you think you could learn from? Is there somebody ahead of you that you have a lot of respect for? Somebody like, all those years ago, John Milton in my life, or maybe, you know, along life's way, there have been a lot of people that I have been ahead of me, and so I'd be like, hey, can I just spend some time with you? Can I hang out with you? Can I learn some things from you? And if you currently don't have a person in your life who is discipling, here's what I would ask you to do. First of all, look around, because they're out there, and then pray about it, because I've asked people to do this before, and they're like, Steve, I don't even know where to start. And I said, well, let's start with prayer. And then just ask God to show you somebody in your life that you can begin to be discipled by and or just spend time with. And you might say, well, okay. The next thing is like, who am I discipling? So if you're a parent, I would hope that you would start with your children. My children are all grown now, but the discipleship process has not stopped. I'm still discipling my four grown children. Whenever I'm with them, you know, if you call my children up and say, hey, is your dad discipling you? They'd go, what? No. It's just that every time that I'm with them, unbeknownst to them probably, I'm actually discipling them. I'm investing time with them. I'm teaching them values. They're asking me about stuff they're going through. I'm speaking into that. And so I'm discipling them. That's what we do. In fact, some of you, if you're working with our children, if you're working with our students, that's what you're doing. You're discipling them. And this is one of the reasons that I love life groups. We have 17 life groups in this church. We have all kinds of life. We have some that are just men, some that are just women. We have mixed groups. And what I love about life groups, and I've been in life groups all of my life, is just the interaction. It's life on life. You're just learning together. Sometimes you're studying a book in the Bible, or I belong to a group called the Fight Club, and we go through books. It's just life on life, talking about what's going on. As a matter of fact, Chris Wirtz, who's here today, is just starting a brand new group, and it's for young men. I love this. These are guys in their 20s and their 30s. And if you want to be involved in that, if you fit into that category, just go online, or Chris is actually here, just ask for him, and he's going to start this brand new life group. But it's going to be a discipleship life group, just guys coming together, talking about life, and that's how we learn so much. Well, how do I get started, Steve? Let me just say this. I've never actually told somebody, I've never used these words, will you disciple me? Again, I think that could be kind of off-putting to some people. They might be kind of like, whoa. I just say, hey, let's get together. Let's go shoot some hoops. Let's just hang out together or something. That's always the way that I sit. And I'm telling you that so you don't have to come up to somebody and use those words. Will you disciple me? You just say, hey, you know, I think you're really a person that I admire. And, you know, there's some things about you. And I'd like to learn from you. I noticed that you seem to have a handle on the Bible. So, hey, man, can we just spend some time together? That's probably the best way to get started, actually. And sometimes I think one of the things that I've done a lot in my life is I just do activities with people. When I was a lot younger, I was a runner, and I did a lot of running. So I'd find running partners. And a lot of times they didn't know it, but I was discipling them. We'd just be running together. We'd be talking. I was just discipling them all the way. You know, we'd be talking about life and problems, and they'd have questions for me. A lot of times I played in basketball leagues. I played in softball leagues. Just discipling people just along the way. Just sharing about Jesus and life. And that's an easy way that you can do it. Jesus also talked about celebrating steps along the way of our discipleship journey. In verse 19, he says, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. I think sometimes we need to celebrate a little bit more on a spiritual level than we do. And baptism is an amazing way to do it. So if you've come into a relationship with Jesus and you've never been baptized, I just want you to encourage you to do that, because it makes a huge statement to everybody around you. It's really, when you get baptized, you are making a proclamation. You are saying that something has happened internally and my life is different. My life has changed. I'm now on this journey with Jesus, and I want the whole world to know. So if you have not been baptized, come talk to us, and we'll talk about what we can do. And by the way, we are having a baptism this summer. Super excited about that, so we'll let you know more about that as the time draws near. So part of this discipleship journey is actually I have to teach what I've been taught. And you don't have to know everything to do that. Again, I realize when I say that, some people are like, well, I don't know a whole lot. You know what? If you are a one-week-old Christian, you can teach somebody else. And you know what you can teach them? You can teach them your story. Your story, how you became a Christ follower, is maybe one of the most powerful things that you have, because it's the one thing that nobody can dispute. I mean, you can't. You know, you're going to tell your story to somebody, and they're going, "Oh, I don't believe that." No, they're going to believe it because it's your story, man. You got it inside of you. So we have to teach what we've been taught. Or maybe you're 5 years down the road, and you actually know quite a bit. And I would just challenge you, well, you've got some knowledge, man. You've got some wisdom. Why aren't you sharing that? There are so many people out there that could benefit from your wisdom, from your experience, your life experience of walking with Jesus. In verse 20, he says, teach these new disciples to obey all the commands that I have given you. So practically, like, how do I do that, all right? So I've got my good friend Rich Nye is here today. I don't know if you guys have met Rich. Rich, why don't you come up here right now? Let me tell you a little bit about him as he's coming up. Rich and I have been surfing together for several years, and he is a martial arts expert. He's been in martial arts for over 20 years. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Rich?
Yeah, so I've kind of been into martial arts my whole life, even as I was a young kid and everything, into karate and everything, and moved down here from L.A. about 35 years ago and got back into martial arts, you know, got into some traditional kung fu, and through the course of training and being discipled as, you know, a student there for my master, I became a teacher. You know, he kind of taught me self-defense, but at the same time, he kind of taught me how to teach.
Yeah.
And so with the idea of me becoming an instructor one day. And so that's kind of where my journey was. And then I ended up teaching for about 22 years.
Yeah. So in a sense, you had a discipleship process, right?
Absolutely.
You learned it. There was a process of learning, and then you did it. And then you began to teach other people, and you've been teaching them for a long time.
In fact, our grand master said that you can never master anything unless you can teach it.
There you go.
And that's kind of the mark of mastery.
So this man right here is lethal. like he could kill you in 10 seconds, right?
12 seconds.
Okay, 12 seconds. Yeah. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to teach me a maneuver right now, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay, because this is part of the discipleship process. So it starts with you teaching me. So why don't you teach me something, okay?
Yeah. So one of the things about teaching, especially in martial arts, is I like teaching concepts.
All right, move over here a little bit.
Okay. Because, you know, one technique's not going to always work
right
every time. So if you know a concept, then you can kind of ad lib to that. I'm going to teach you a pretty simple one.
Okay.
For like somebody throwing a straight punch at your nose, right?
Okay. Right.
So the concepts are going to be: I want to be prepared first.
Yes.
Then I want to close the gap. So I want to
instead of
getting away, I want to get in, close the gap. There's a lot of people, you know, a punch comes, they move away from it.
Yeah.
But the idea is, like, if you ever watch boxing, these guys block and get in because they're trying to close the gap, right?
Okay.
So that's what we're going to do. So there's a lot you can do from there, but I'm just going to teach you a real simple one. So simple, you're going to be able to teach all your friends.
All right. I can't wait.
All right. So I want you to just kind of throw, like, a straight punch off of that arm. So what I want to do, I want to, instead of stepping away and blocking, because that now I'm in the wheel well for another punch or something, right?
Yeah.
But I want to step in, boom. Now if you try to throw that other punch, see, it's a lot harder. Throw your other punch. See, it's going to be a lot harder.
Okay.
If I were to block, throw that punch again out here, now all of a sudden that punch is open. You can hit me with that other
punch. That's right. Okay, I see. Yeah.
So if you watch boxing, they're always closing their opponent. So the way I prepare it first, this guy's causing trouble. So, hey, man, I don't want any trouble. See where my hands are?
Right.
Now, if I make fist, I'm ready to fight.
Right? Okay.
He doesn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm just say, hey, man, I don't want any trouble. But all of a sudden, here comes that punch. So, boom, now I'm a block. And see, I'm stuck to you right here, right?
Yeah.
Closed off. Now, immediately, I want to counterattack because I don't want to just block you and then wait for another punch to come.
Okay.
So as soon as I block, I'm going to take this hand and then chop you
right
in the throat. Yeah.
Okay.
That's going to make you kind of gag.
Yeah.
Have you ever gotten hit in the throat there?
I have.
You know, you got to kind of gag and stuff, right? So that's going to be the first counterattack.
Okay.
So let's move back a little bit. I'm ready to fall.
All right. Okay.
Here.
Okay.
So go ahead and throw that punch again. So here comes that punch. Boom, I blocked you.
Okay.
Now another thing, it's like instead of chopping, I can tackle you and take you to the ground, but we'll stay on the
here.
Yeah. So I blocked you and then boom, I'm going to hit you right in the throat there. And that's going to make you gag.
Uh-huh.
Right? So I'll have you pretend like I hit you there really hard and you can kind of like gag.
Okay.
Because I'm going to show you the next move after that. So here comes that punch again. I step in, block, right?
Okay.
And then chop the throat.
Okay.
Right? So now you're gagging. So then
to
finish you off,
I'm
going to take my free hand and then just do a palm strike right to your nose.
Oh, man, okay. and then I'm out.
And then you're going to be knocked
I'm
back.
Out of commission.
You're going to have a broken nose probably. Your eyes are going to water.
Yeah.
And then I can run. Get
okay.
That's the key, is don't stick around and see what he's got next. Get out of there and go get help, right?
Okay.
So let's try that again just a couple times, then I'm going to have you try.
Okay.
So block.
Okay.
I close you off, chop you in the throat, and then from here comes a punch.
Oh, there it comes. All right.
Or a microphone to the head. Yeah, So you want to see if we can try that?
Yeah, okay. So you threw a punch
at me. So I'm going to throw a punch at you. Okay. You're going to step in. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to block with this hand.
Oh, okay.
So what you're going to do, I probably should say, step in with your left leg, okay?
Okay.
So as I throw that punch, boom. Now I'm closed off. See, it's going to be a lot harder for me to hit you.
And then?
Now take that same hand, chop me in the throat.
And then,
boom, right in the nose. Yeah, like that.
All right.
Let's try that again.
Okay.
So repetition. So here comes that punch. You're going to intercept, chop, and then palm strike. Boom.
Got you.
And then you should be gone, and then you run away.
All right. And there you have it, folks. Thank you. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate that. Just want to remind you, if you guys try to punch me in the nose, you're going down. But that's, again, that's part of the discipleship process. So we do that, you know, biblically speaking. So what was that? That was, so he showed me something, and then we did it together, and then I did it. And that's really all discipleship is. Now, does that seem hard? Come on. Not that hard, right? Because he showed me, and what really helped me in that moment was when I was participating. And so, you know, we're going through the motions, and after, like, okay, I'm starting to get it, I'm doing it, and then having me do it. That's exactly what we're talking about. That's what discipleship is. So in verse 20, it says, and be sure of this, I'm with you always, even to the end. So I think sometimes this is where we get a sense of insecurity, like, I don't know if I can do this. And to know that God is with you, first of all, to know that Jesus said, look, if you're going to follow me, I need you to go. And I need you to make disciples. And then to know that he didn't leave us to just do this by ourselves, but he said, and I'm going to empower you. I'm going to be with you. These words are so encouraging. I'm with you always, even to the end. And knowing that will give you a sense of empowerment when you go out and you begin to disciple. All of us feel a sense of inadequacy at different times. We're like, I don't know if I can do that. And you stay, and it's probably never going to be perfect, and it might be a little bit clumsy. But just go. Just do it, because it'll be the greatest blessing in your life. But even more importantly than that, it's going to be the greatest blessing in somebody else's life that you begin to pour into, that you will influence that person. Let me go back to, and I started with John Milton, and I want to come back to him as I close. What I didn't tell you is that John Milton died at about 43 years old from a heart attack. I didn't really get to have that much time with him. But that was over 30 years ago, and over 30 years later, I'm still talking about him. He had that much influence in my life. He discipled me. And so even though he's gone, his influence still lives with me. That is the power of discipleship. That's why all of us need to be involved in discipleship at some level. So here's the challenge that I want to offer you right now. The first one is that you would find someone ahead of you. Find some. If you don't have somebody that's ahead of you, go pray about it, look around, ask me. Maybe I can maybe reference somebody for you or something like that. But just find somebody that's ahead of you. You can learn from them. And then find somebody, and probably the best way to do this is get into a life group that's right beside you. Somebody that maybe you have some things in common. You can hang out with that person. And then you can just talk about where you're both at, you know, what you're going through, which is one of the most powerful things in this discipleship journey. And last of all, find someone behind you. Find somebody that you look at them, you can say, hey, I can tell you're kind of new at this. And I want to come alongside of you, and I want to help you on your discipleship journey. Let me pray with you. Father, we just want to thank you that you sent your son, Jesus, into this world to model for us what it looks like to live for you, what it looks like to disciple people and to walk on the discipleship path, Lord. You've called us into this world to usher in your kingdom. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And we do that through discipling people, through influencing people, Lord. And as we look around our country today, we see there are all kinds of influences out there. Many of them are not good. But God, you have called us to be influences for the kingdom of God. And so I ask right now that in our lives, on a personal level, whatever is going on with us, God, help us to take this serious. You said, go. And help us to go and to believe it and to do it and to overcome our fears and our insecurities and to know that you said, I will be with you always, even to the end. And to believe that with all of our heart. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thanks again for listening to our podcast. If you'd like prayer to connect with us, please go to our website at pacificlifechurch.org, and we would love to connect with you.